President Trump has said that starting next week, millions of people in the U.S. illegally will be removed unless they're hot enough to be a potential Mrs. Trump number four. Facebook has reportedly unveiled its, quote, most invasive and dangerous form of surveillance yet with its new Libra cryptocurrency. Be that as it may, it'll be far less disconcerting than getting a poke from some random kid you sat behind in biology class. And finally, over 16 tons of cocaine was seized in a historic bust at a Philadelphia port. Authorities almost didn't find the cocaine as it was doused in 43 tons of whiz-wit. The Trump Report starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Welcome to the Trump Report. It is, yes, it is I, Christian Blatt, here for a fun-filled Tuesday afternoon. Return guest here on the Trump Report, Al Gregg. How are you, sir?
Hi, I'm doing good, man. The other half of the Bavarian Boys.
That's right, the Bavarian Boys are reunited here.
A.K.A. Young Street Life.
Young Street Life from the Better Call Saul after show. Yeah. And, of course, on the other end of the desk, Scott Moore.
Hello.
And S-Man, this week, it's for the fellas.
Yes.
So,
The homies.
Right. The ladies will be back soon. Yeah. And we'll have a programming note about next week's show, which will involve you keeping an eye out for when exactly you're going to find the show next week. But it will not be in this time slot. And in the booth, we have our engineer, Ryan. Ryan, you said that you're not from Philly. You're from Delaware. Don't pretend that you're from Philly.
Hey, went to school in Philly 4 years.
I'm just saying you're not from Philly.
Eagles fan. I was at City Hall for the Super Bowl. Right. And you know what? I've been hearing all day about this cocaine bust.
Well, you know, have you ever felt more proud of the city of brotherly love?
Not since Nick Foles did the Philly special in Minnesota.
Well, there you go. So, you know, I love that story. I love stories like that. That's a lot of cocaine, by the way. I mean, not to, you know, if you're Elton John, probably not. I mean, not now.
Not
but,
now.
You know, back in the
yes.
day.
He that was just a regular,
yeah,
you know.
That was the month of April back then. Anyway, we have a lot of things that we want to talk about. And, you know, Scott, as a proud Floridian, I'm surprised that you're here not in Orlando.
Orlandoan or whatever they're called.
Floridian.
Yeah. Well, Floridian, but I forgot you're actually from Orlando.
From Orlando. Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, obviously Orlando is where I think a lot of fairy tales begin.
Being
from there and also
a living fairy tale right here.
You've got I mean, who knew that you'd end up on the Trump Report?
Exactly.
You know?
Dreams do come true.
Obviously, you've got Disney and Universal and I think Gator World might be there.
Yep, and I'm sure Parrotland and you know.
Oh yeah, so there's a lot of dreams that happen there. President Trump is very excited about the fact that Trump supporters were camped out overnight to attend this this rally, I guess. Mm-hmm. They're always rallies. What do you think about this level of excitement? Is it because, one, it's the first event, the official kickoff, or is it just because in Orlando – it's somewhere that you can go for free instead of Disneyland, which I think is like $130 now.
Yeah, exactly. You have to take out a mortgage now to basically go to Disney World. You know, there were two parts actually, of course, because, you know, I always like to troll Trump and Mitch McConnell. And I wrote back and basically said about how terrible his ratings are in the city of Orlando, where this rally is taking place. And talked about him busing in because, you know, he always accuses people busing in people from other states and other areas to vote. Because actually in Orlando, you know, Orange County is heavily Democratic now. And we'll get to this later when we get to polls and everything.
Sure, yeah.
When we start talking about the I-4 corridor, that's like the swing epicenter of the swing state. And, you know, you have Tampa, Orlando, and then up the coast you've got Daytona Beach. But essentially, Orlando itself only has like a mid-20s approval rating for Trump. So he's actually going into an area that's really he's not very popular in, and the city of Orlando is very Democratic. They've had a Democratic mayor there for the past 16 years. So the city itself is very Democratic, but then when you get to the surrounding, you know, suburbs and exurbs, that's where you find a lot of his support. So technically people are busing in, people are coming in from the suburbs and the exurbs and like Lake County, which is west of Orlando, and it's a little bit more rural, and Seminole County is about 50-50 Democrat-Republican, but a lot of people in the suburbs are still very big Trump supporters. And this, as you know, is an incredibly important state. So it makes sense that any major campaign event is going to kick off in Florida, because that's, if you win Florida, you essentially win the presidency.
Which is interesting when you think about just the size of landmass. You can understand like a California or a Texas, you know, some of those larger states. But yeah, obviously we've spent a lot of time in the last 20 years keeping an eye on Florida late into the evening.
Well, I mean, even when you look back just at the last races in 2018 with the gubernatorial candidacy with DeSantis and Andrew Gillum, and then Rick Scott beating, who was the governor at the time, beating the incumbent Bill Nelson, who had been there since 2000, since that infamous race. You could see just how close the numbers really are. Like, Florida really is that close every single time. Mm-hmm. So that's why if you can win Florida, especially now with 29 electoral votes, and who knows now when the new census comes through of how many more, because this is the third biggest state now behind Texas and California. So if you get Florida, that's already going to put you well ahead to win the presidency with the electoral votes. And that's why it's so important.
Hang on a second, Al. For those watching on YouTube, Ryan has pulled up a county breakdown.
2016.
This is 2016. Yeah, this is when Trump won. Yep. And you see, but how much of the population lives in those blue counties?
Well, that's
a significant amount, right?
The majority of the population is down south. East Florida, where you see Miami-Dade County at the very bottom, and then you have Broward County and Palm Beach County, and then further up, Orlando is in Orange County, which is in the middle. Basically, you have that little county above it, which is Seminole, and the bigger county below is Osceola. So that's the Orlando metro area, and you can see that's where, you know, again, where he's going to, right in the middle of all that, where the big population. But to the west, like Lake County, and all those areas, they're very rural, so and exurban, so you have a lot of people that will come in that are very big Trump supporters.
And I didn't expect us to get this bogged down in Florida, but I happen to be curious. There's that over button near the panhandle. There's two blue counties. Yeah. What's there?
Leon County, Tallahassee.
Oh, okay.
And that's all very populated with, you know, again, very Democratic areas there in the panhandle.
So Gadsden. We're going to assume that this isn't the only visit to Florida that President Trump's going to make.
Of course.
I think he'll probably be back soon and often. I'm sorry, Al, what were you going to say before?
No, I was just going to say, aside from everybody knows the importance of Florida and how controversial it's been, the only thing that amazes me even more than that is just how intense the Floridian voters are. I mean, like, you're talking about the people he's bussing in, but they're each person, their intensity and loyalty to Trump is like off the charts.
Yeah.
And I don't know, man. I guess that's always like a huge factor when you talk about, okay, Trump and his base, right? He doesn't have a majority. He's always less, way under 50%, but his devoted followers will do anything for him.
Well, that's why I say it's a cult, but that's a whole other discussion, because you have a cult of personality there. It goes beyond a party. It goes beyond all that. And
yeah,
it's
look,
now to a point
and anybody that's that in lockstep with their candidate or elected official, I mean, you know, sure. And Chelsea, who's usually here, hates when I compare Trump supporters to Bernie supporters, in the sense of just how passionate they are about their guy and how they would pretty much, you know, do anything with, well, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
They would follow to the letter of the law.
Anything.
Yeah. Well, they would, within the letter of the law, at least for one side. But in all honesty, you know, just that level of passion. And I mean, to me, that's what was severely lacking for Hillary's campaign.
Right, absolutely.
Was that
100%.
There was almost no passion.
Yeah.
It was just like, well, I guess that's who we got.
Yeah.
And I don't want that other guy. But I would say for the base, that has built so much over these last 3 years, because even if there's things that, look, there's things a lot of them definitely don't like. If you're truly an evangelical, you definitely have to just, you know, look the other way and give up on the 3 marriages, infidelity. I could go on.
Still hasn't built the wall. Immigration is worse, supposedly.
I mean, that's a huge issue to a lot of people, is that, you know, where's the wall? I saw a tweet. They showed it on CNN when I was at the gym the other day, a tweet from Ann Coulter, who was like, hey, remember when we were going to get a wall? So she really won't let go of that. And the fact that it bothers Trump is why she's really doubled down on it.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that her next book will be called Remember When We Were Going to Get a Wall.
Yeah.
But anyway, and I think the more that, you know, the media and also the self-proclaimed intelligentsia tells you that how terrible this president is, they're willing to overlook a lot of things because they're like, well, we like him for the Supreme Court. There are these issues that are important to us. Kind of the rest can sort of, you know, fall by the wayside, like a lot of people were able to, you know, still defend Bill Clinton despite his allegations. They're like, we're not worried about that part of it. We're worried about the president part.
So. And the fact that he has continued to double down on that base as well. He has not tried to expand his numbers at all. He's not tried to reach out to anyone else.
Yeah.
He hasn't even tried to reach out to even some other Republicans who are very wary of him. He's just doubled down that base. He's been giving that base that love. So they're even more encouraged to continue to support him no matter what. And he's hoping, which we'll have to see what happens next year, but he's hoping that he can still get those people to passionately go out and vote because he won by such a weird ability there of getting that white working class vote that he'll have to see if he can actually pull those votes again and actually pull that, especially in the upper Midwest and other states that went back to Democrats during the midterms last year. So it'll be interesting to see if that strategy actually works or if it's now a failing strategy.
And quick note on the Republicans in Congress. I'm sorry. It just amazes me how loyal they are to him. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody wants to cross him. Nobody wants to get be on the other side of Donald Trump, you know, when they're running and get those tweets and get primaried. But, you know, to me, it's amazing.
The impressive thing about it is that, you know, the people who were the most outspoken, like, you can you know, I mean, he's hardly a tough guy, but Paul Ryan was someone who was never really, you know, rank and file, but he's not there anymore. And I think that, you know, and we'll be able to focus on this, I think, next year when it comes down to re-election and how far from Trump you need to be. You're going to have people who, you know, get photographed giving him a big hug because that's going to help. And then you have some that are just like, oh, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to introduce you at that rally. But, you know, it's Orlando. Well, I think we can get somebody to put on the Fievel, the American Tail Mouse. They can go ahead. Yeah, because Mickey's not going to get in on that. You got to get the American Tail Mouse. So I think that, you know, to me, this is a big event because the entire family is going to be there, including Tiffany. So if Tiffany Trump is allowed to go, you know
it's a big deal.
It's for everybody.
And I don't even know who Tiffany is.
Exactly. Right. That's Marla Maple's daughter. That's his second wife's daughter.
Okay.
Yep. You know, the one who you see once in a while. And I just find it fitting that the event is being held at the Amway Center.
Yes, exactly.
Which is basically like the Avon of dish detergent.
It is. You know, another
cult. You're going door to door just selling. It's a little bit like basically being called a Snake Oil Stadium.
Well, it is Betsy DeVos's father-in-law who
Of course.
Had owned the Orlando Magic at the time, and then they bought the naming rights to the arena at the time. So it is actually – so there's all that connection there. So
Trumpalooza.
I'm sure Betsy DeVos is going to be there too.
Well, I mean, you know, how are we not there?
I should be there covering it, I know.
In your sleeping bags and your tents.
It'll be interesting to be able to focus on a little bit about, you know, how this event goes. And also next week we will have two not presidential debates, but we will have two candidate debates because there are, of course, 1,000 Democrats running for the nomination. And last week we had a big conversation about how I think it's too many. Some people feel that this is the time for there to be too many.
Exactly.
But
I agree that
I think when you have to hold it on two nights, that's when it's too many. And then there's the A-list night, which is kind of really the second night is the good night. So you'll have to we will not be doing this show next Tuesday at the usual time. We'll be doing a debate post show, which we'll have to let you know. We may only do one show after Thursday. I think it's getting tricky for people to schedule the Wednesday night. And I can also go to a screening of the new Spider-Man movie that night.
Bam.
So that's already – I'll tell you that, which is more important for me. It's for my other shows. I need to go. So,
research.
Yeah, well, it is. And so I believe we'll be doing Thursday at 9 Pacific. The debate will end at 8. So you'll be able to find us on AfterBuzz Thursday at 9. Anyway, let's talk about there's a variety of other things I want to talk about. But Al, you know, in asking to come back on, you had a very specific issue that I know you wanted to bring up, which is something that's already starting to come up on the campaign trail. So I wanted to kind of let you speak to
Right. I've been following, I don't know if you guys, well, reparations has been a topic, you know, obviously, since slavery, Jim Crow, but it hasn't been brought back up, at least officially, you know, into the Congress, into the government for over a decade. So tomorrow, June 19th, and if you guys don't know, better known as Juneteenth. There you go. Are you from the South? You already
from Florida. Orlando, Florida.
There you go. Floridian. And
wait, where are you from?
Born and raised in LA, city boy.
Oh, yeah. So South, South Central? Southern California?
South LA? South.
Exactly.
And yeah, for those of you who don't know what Juneteenth is, that was the day that the June 19th was the day that the slaves were officially freed in Texas. But the reason you refer to June 19th as Juneteenth is a kind of like expression of vagueness is because the word didn't get around to everybody. Some people didn't get it till months later. Mm-hmm. Some of the slaves didn't get it till probably like a year later. Sure. So it has a whole lot of significance. But that's when they've chose to do the House hearing on slavery reparations
tomorrow.
Just to
interject, I mean, there it's not just the Civil War, but Civil War in particular, there were battles that took place, what, months after the war was actually over.
Because,
you know, they apparently had really bad Wi-Fi at that point. I don't quite understand how it happened. But anyway, back to your
muskets
more serious
didn't have
point.
Wi-Fi. So, but one of the interesting things that's kind of propelled this debate on reparations, because it's always been kind of simmering in the background, is this movement called the ADOS movement. And I was telling Christian about it, and I don't know if you've been following it, but we were like the first people on the other network, our sister network, BHL, to kind of to introduce it, and I've been on it for like over a year. ADOS, for those who don't know, it's a hashtag move. Hashtag ADOS stands for American Descendants of Slaves. And basically, while it's an identifier of a certain community, black people who are descendants of slaves in America, well, identifies their community, but it basically revolves around the topic of reparations and being very specific. They're like the more militant, the more cut and dry. We don't want to hear about, you know, reconciliation. Right. We don't want to hear about giving the money to restitution to people of color. We wanted there specifically. We wanted to go to black people who were descendants of slaves. And to some people, it seemed kind of controversial. But Twitter has really propelled that debate, particularly black Twitter, because all the Democratic candidates from Cory Booker to Kamala Harris to Elizabeth Warren, all of them were mum on reparations, and then when they started being brought up on hot on Twitter, they were like, "Well, you know, I don't think it's a good idea," and you know, "And how do we come up with a number that?" But the debate online has forced each and every one in the Democratic Party to say, "Okay, this is something we need to take a look at," and that really, if you're kind of like coming out against reparations, is if you're a Democrat, you're on like kind of like the wrong side politically.
Well, that was the reason why I wanted to. You know, first of all, I think it's an interesting topic, and we were starting to see this creep up over. I feel like it's only been in the last month or so that it's become more vocal. Not that it never came up, but specifically with who you're talking about, Cory Booker, Kamala Harris.
Right. I heard with Cory Booker for sure. Any of the baby, the baby grant type thing that he was pushing for a while. That's the one I heard first from him. But he
was one of those guys who started stuttering the minute you asked him about
right.
it originally.
And I do think that it's an issue that, you know, look, when you're running for, well, you're running for anything, but when you're ultimately attempting to run for the nomination for president, you've got pretty buttoned down on the topics you're expecting to be asked about. Mm-hmm. And this isn't something that comes up every cycle.
Right.
So it is something that I think people are very passionate about, obviously. But they're basically – you're not going to get to be the Democrat who comes out strongly against reparations if you expect to get the nomination. I mean,
right.
I think no matter – you know, I don't think any of them have strong enough footing that they could be like – you know, what you'll probably get is we should look into it.
I like the idea. Let's take a look at it. Let's discuss it.
I think it's a really good idea.
We're
going to need to explore it.
Yeah.
And you're definitely going to get some of that.
But these
debates that are going to happen next week, I would like to see, you know, maybe just go down the line, the 10 of you, anybody against it. And the person that puts their hand up should get time. I was like, well, then tell us why. They'll probably not be running for president anymore the next day. But I think if you're a Democrat and you don't believe in it, I would at least be interested in hearing somebody defend it. I think it's one of those issues, though, that everybody's going to have to get in line on. Look, there were plenty of Democrats who, you know, famous Democrats like President Obama and Hillary Clinton who weren't in favor of gay marriage at one point. But then, obviously, times change.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm perfectly fine with people changing their mind on any issue.
Mm.
I just wonder, how strongly people are going to feel about this.
Well, here's where my...
And what's political about it?
Right.
What's them
And if the issue is important
changing.
To you, and I don't mean just you, Al, but to everyone, if it's important to you, you have to really weed out who do I feel is not being disingenuous about this support.
Which is my next response. And just from a personal standpoint, I know anything boils down to a political issue, just like impeachment. It's not about whether it's right or wrong or what you deserve. So I'm not one of those people who's like, okay, gimme, or if you don't, then I'm gonna die. I work hard. People know you work hard, but it's important to know where people stand when you ask them if you're willing to pay an outstanding debt of service.
Ryan in the booth wanted to point out that Bernie Sanders has always been in favor of them. So that seemed like we were getting some Bernie bro information, but that's all right. It's a fact, and I'm glad that you brought it to
us.
Just fact checking.
Quick, guys, can I chime in real quick?
Please
too?
Do.
Here's the we're talking about the politics of it, and this is where I'm very cynical. If you look down, I shot Christian a list. And it was like an image of all the people that were actually on the House committee. From what I saw, there was only one black person. I think it was Sheila Jackson. Mm-hmm. The rest, whites and immigrants and fine. But the ironic thing is when you look at that image, if you take a look at it, you can Google it. I actually got it off this guy, Tariq Nasheed's Twitter timeline. He's a very outspoken guy for reparations.
Yeah, well, let me just interject. Ryan, if you can find Tariq Nasheed, and that's Tariq with a Q, you'll probably find it. He posted it on Twitter today, a little bit around noon. So sorry about that. I didn't realize that I would have done a better service to the show if I had shared that with Ryan.
Well, anyway, he kind of like breaks it down and he shows where each, congressman is from, and actually not one of them is a descendant of American slaves, including... Sheila Jackson, her family's Jamaican immigrants. Uh-huh. So here's the other side to it. They're going to have people like Danny Glover come and speak, and Ta-Nehisi Coates, very well-known writer, and he wrote The Case for Reparations. But I'm like you, I'm very cynical at the end of the day that things are going to get done. It's going to be, in my opinion, I hate... Hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. Right. Just more talking. Right. Like, let's talk about it.
Well, and I do think that it's, this support, genuine or not, on the Democratic side, is going to make this a big issue for President Trump, because I think you're going to hear some people that hear that thrown around. And, it's very easy to characterize everyone who would be against it as a racist. I think that there are probably a lot of people who might be conditionally in favor of it. It's like, well, what can you prove in terms of your ancestry?
Exactly.
And look, those records have to be very difficult to without a doubt say like, oh, yeah, because I would say a lot of people who aren't, undoubtedly descended from slaves can't actually prove it.
Right.
It's
difficult to find, but they're there. Mm-hmm. Like with all the research, we have all these ancestry.com, and you can come up, if people are willing to put in the effort, like case in point, okay, Ben Affleck, this is how it landed on the other side.
Yeah, I remember this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was doing that interview about his ancestry, and they found out that his grandfather, great, whoever, one of his ancestors owned a plantation, owned slaves. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, it can be very specific. It's not just about who had an ancestor who was a slave. To me, if you have one that qualifies you, because they put in a numerous free hours of labor, but it's also like, where did the wealth come from? You can narrow it down to specific families, particular companies, just like they did when with the Jews from the Holocaust, which I supported after World War II. We're going to reward them, with their own state. We're going to support them monetarily, and I think it was the German companies like Mercedes and Volkswagen. So there's specific families and specific companies that benefited off of generational wealth.
Yeah, and I think, look, especially if you were a plantation-owning family in the South in this time period, you just have to say, like, yes, that's, it's a terrible thing from our past, and let's try to figure out what to do about it. But you have to mean it, And I don't know that'll be the interesting thing, and I'm sure that there are people at work on trying to figure out of these candidates who might actually have a, you know, family ties as faint as they might be,
right,
to possibly having, you know, profited substantially, you know, from the this free labor from slaves, and you know who will be doing the heaviest amount of research into it, not the Trump campaign, but other Democrats will be looking into other Democrats.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
That you know, Joe Biden has like a South Carolina wing of his family or something.
That would be interesting.
That made millions on sugar in 1850.
Yeah, yeah.
So, again, look, it's a fascinating issue that it'll be interesting to me to see how it plays out.
Right.
And I think that it's so multifaceted. And I think that we're going to hear a lot about it. And at some point, President Trump is going to have to tell you what he thinks.
Right.
And it depends on when he got asked about it. Mm. Is he coached on his answer, or does he give one of the answers that the next day he said, well, that I didn't say that. Mm-hmm. It's fake news. And you can play it back. And it's like, but that's what you said. And it's like, well, that's not what I meant. Mm. So it'll be interesting, as I said. So let us know in the chat your thoughts on this as a whole. But also, so there's the issue of reparations itself, right. But then also the political ramifications of this clearly is going to become an important issue. And, you know, let me pose the question and maybe we'll get to it next week. Do you think it'll be a distraction from, you know, people that are running basically on an agenda of, hey, we have to replace Trump, if you get bogged down on not this specific issue, but these other issues that, you know, start to eclipse everything
else? It already has become a divisive issue.
Right, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm sure it will come up in probably both of those debates next week.
Where do you stand?
Right, exactly. Now, something that I wanted to get to, we didn't have time for it last week, but the story continued to evolve this week, which is the back and forth between Jon Stewart and Mitch McConnell. Now, Jon Stewart is a comedian who, amongst his many accomplishments, once upon a time hosted a show called Short Attention Span Theater, where they showed comedy clips of, like, basically music videos of stand-up comedians. And that's someone who is, you know, kind of lasered in on by the majority leader of the United States Senate, Mitch McConnell. And I think the fact that he's addressing this will tell you how effective it was last week when Jon Stewart spoke out on behalf of, you know, the first responders who were having that that beneficiaries fund, you know, it was up for renewal, and the fact that, you know, no one was there. Well, not no one. That's not true. That now see what I just did there. That's fake news. But what was it? Five, right? There were only five of the elected officials who actually attended.
Look it up, something like that.
Yeah, yeah, I believe. I'm generalizing. So but it wasn't enough. And he did tearfully and very impassioned, you know, tried to speak up for these people, and Mitch McConnell is actually the roadblock to this, as he is on so many things, because it passed the House the next day. I think that was very effective. But just like if, you know, you vote to repeal Obamacare in a Republican House and you have a Democratic Senate, it stops there. If you were to possibly ratify articles of impeachment in the House, the Senate wouldn't have to take it up. So This is the step that it's at now. And Mitch McConnell specifically said that Jon Stewart was, quote, looking for something to take offense with when he tearfully berated Congress for not showing up for this 9/11 hearing. So anyone who saw that video, I think it's hard to not see what an important issue this is for Jon Stewart, you know. And if it weren't important for him, you would hope somebody else would step. Because I know he's been outspoken about this for years.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And
I can't believe we're still dealing with it.
Right. And that it has to get renewed. Right. This portion of it has to get renewed every 5 years. Mm-hmm. And look, Mitch McConnell's in charge. The expectation is that that's what will happen again. You know, this will come up again in 5 years, and we'll see what his beard looks like then. But so I just sort of wanted to kind of get your thoughts on it on the whole, and why you think And I know that you try to not live inside the mind of Mitch McConnell, Scott.
Oh, God.
But no. Why you think this issue in particular is something that he's not willing to really pass a clean bill? Is it just because he won't take something from the House and be like, yeah, they did it right?
Mm-hmm.
He needs to put his stink on everything?
Yeah, no, I do think that. And I think he wants to put it back on Jon Stewart being an overdramatic liberal.
Yeah.
And, you know, playing it up is like, this was not a big deal. He's turning it into something that's a bigger deal. Of course, we're going to pass something that's going to include taking care of the families and everything. But again, it's like I've said from the very beginning, Trump is basically a bumbling idiot that really doesn't have experience in government. And Mitch McConnell's the one that carries out all these things because he's the one that knows how to game the system, and he has for years. And we've talked about this, and this is where Republicans were smarter the Democrats from the beginning, going back to the 80s. Ever since, you know, they got Ronald Reagan in a landslide in 80, they have been planning the long game, and they've been focusing on the judges and the Supreme Court. And then they, when they lost in 2006, they started focusing on state level to be able to take back the power at the state level and build up their bench. And this is something that Mitch McConnell and the Republicans have done a very good game at. That said, yes, he doesn't want to have anything that even looks like it came from Democrats that he's supporting, and it's too bad that he continues to play this game, especially at this point in time when it should be clean and it should be an easy thing that we all unanimously agree on.
I felt like Jon Stewart was all but saying his name when he was saying, but there's one person who's this roadblock when it hits the floor.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, 5 of the 14 members on the subcommittee showed up for that hearing last week. So I was right that it was 5. I actually thought it was 5 out of 10. So it's even a smaller percentage.
Yeah,
it's a third.
I thought it was 6.
Essentially a third.
And see, here was the narrative. Jon was saying he was displeased about how come there wasn't enough people, and then the other narrative came back, well, it's a small committee, but it wasn't the full amount of the committee. Everybody wasn't there. And it's so funny, the different narratives back and forth.
And Al, I wanted to get your reaction to Mitch McConnell. The direct quote is, I don't know why he's all bent out of shape. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I would say that Mitch McConnell... I would say Mitch McConnell is kind of synonymous with tone deaf. Mm-hmm. But I think... I don't know. I guess it says a lot with where we are right now that him saying that hasn't become a bigger issue.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
That's terrible optics.
Exactly. Right?
Like, why is he all bent out of shape over these first responders who have basically shortened our life to try to help people on the worst day in the history of this country? So go ahead.
No,
I want you to react to that.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say I was amazed by that statement too, but we're in the era of Trump. So the bar has gotten so low that you can say things
and just
so crass.
Lower and lower,
lower, so crass and so classless. It's almost like we're not even surprised anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's the unfortunate part. Without getting taking a political stance on the corruption, I think, that goes on with the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. But let's just say, because he does so many things openly. Mm-hmm. And that gives the Republicans to do things openly. He's literally saying, you know, I'll shoot somebody and I'll get off for it. So and I'll do this and I'll do that. And I'll say, why are you being so emotional about this topic? And like, but we're getting, it's been normalized is what I'm saying.
And it has been also with
Mitch McConnell. He doesn't have to worry as much because he's from Kentucky. It's not like he's in a battleground state where he even thinks he might have any kind of – he feels pretty comfortable to be as disgusting about as he wants to be because he feels he's in a safe enough place that either he's going to win again easily in Kentucky next year and that that he thinks that if he can hold on to the Senate, then he's going to be leader again. So he doesn't feel the repercussions necessary that maybe some other people would feel if they were knowing that they were going to be up for a big race next year and – you know, so he feels like he can get away with anything, too. Kind of like Trump. He's taking a page from Trump and thinking he can say whatever he wants now.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Mitch McConnell is, I don't know, like you were saying before, you know, he's someone who is, this is the stuff that he's actually good at. He's very well versed in all of this. It's just, it's very particular, you know, the means to the end. And, you know, like we were saying, I don't really see there being any negatives for him for doing this, you know, and you,
which is sad too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when, you know, we talk about the corruption that Al referenced, I mean, Chelsea, who's usually here, will be the first to point out. She will always say things like, well, it's more Republicans than Democrats, but it is everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
I think that is a fundamental problem.
Absolutely.
Especially on, you know, well, not even especially, just on any issue, you run into these problems. And, you know, I think that when it comes to this specific issue, that's the just the infuriating thing, that even this gets politicized, right, when it should just be cut and dried, and the hearing shouldn't even have to happen. The fact that, you know what, you know, 9 people didn't show up, that shouldn't matter, because right, it shouldn't have had to happen, and it should have, right, just, this should have been taken care of
right
in 2001, you know, basically.
Right, and it's the same thing with disaster relief that's now become politicized, yeah, too. Whenever you're saying, okay, well, we want to give billions of dollars to help people with hurricane relief and fire, wildfire damage, and then it becomes politicized now too.
And can I I'm sorry, man, you just hit the nail on the head when you brought up natural disasters, mm-hmm, because that's one of the things they use to conflate. Mm-hmm. Obviously 9/11 was a huge disaster, life-changing disaster, mm-hmm, but then they start conflating it. Well, what do we do with the tornadoes? It's like the same thing, mm-hmm, they do with the reparations. Well, okay, well gay people deserve reparations. Yes, they do. But were they enslaved? No, but they'll start throwing in all different, mm-hmm, types of layers and nuances that'll cloud the issue.
We only have about 2 minutes, so ooh, wow, it's sort of it's too big an issue to do as a throwaway topic, but I wanted to throw this in before we moved on for the day. So, Scott, how do you feel about the escalating situation with Iran? Do you feel comfortable that we have a commander-in-chief who's going to responsibly handle this situation?
I think everyone that's listened to this podcast more than once already knows what I think about it.
Yes, yeah. But what do you think? Well, then the follow-up to that is, what do you think will actually what do you think realistic expectation is happens between now and the next time we do the show next week?
I don't think we're going to be going into war perhaps in the next week or two, but it's a lot of saber rattling. It's again, you have someone like John Bolton that's trying to run things here right now, and he's always wanting to get a war going, and that's why the Cuba policy has changed again. That's why you see some of these issues again with North Korea, China. A lot of this stuff starts with. You know, someone like that who's a neocon that's just gaming for war, and it's very dangerous. As if we didn't learn the hard enough lessons from Afghanistan and Iraq, and then even going back to other wars, like even going back to Vietnam. I mean, we just getting ourselves involved in things that we shouldn't be, and provoking people we shouldn't be, and it could have disastrous results for us, but also just in the Middle East itself, because that you know is like a powder keg there. It's sort of like, you know, the start to World War One. You take one little powder keg there, you let it go off, and then it goes, spreads into the Middle East, and next thing you know, you're involved in a major war, and then you have oil prices that are through the roof, and you have a lot of other issues out there that, again, like we talked about with North Korea when that was a risk about 2 years ago, it's just not something that's smart that we should be provoking right now. So hopefully cooler heads will avail, but...
But where are those cool heads?
I know. We don't have any.
You can say everything anything and everything you want about John Bolton, but amazing mustache. You cannot take that away from him. So as we wind things down here, Al, as somebody who I'm sure is certainly cognizant and aware of what's going on politically, I feel like you don't. Live and die by this stuff. You don't breathe these issues. What, as we're talking now and as we're here, what is it, on June 18th, 2019, what do you think is maybe not even the most important? Is there something that you personally are like, oh, this is what I'm terrified about, and I want to send people off into the night not being able to fall asleep with whatever keeps Al Gregg up at night?
That's a scary man, because I've gotten so cynical and the bar's gotten so low. Mm-hmm. Honestly,
yeah,
I'm preparing myself for another Trump administration.
I would say that all of us should be prepared for that.
Yeah, you know? Dems, we got a circular firing, Scott, but is it scary? Yes, but it's also, it wouldn't be surprising. And we were talking about the bar constantly getting lowered and us being more inoculated to these policies. I guess what I'm saying is, I've had to, as much as of a political junkie I've had to divorce myself so much from the process, because it will eat at you, mm-hmm, and feed at you, and so much is out of your control. You know, it's at this point, I mean, I'm an independent. I'm not even allowed to vote in the primary, but I just can't wait to, like, you know, like vote for the bills and the things that I can and sure. the local, you know, and local elections, because I feel like so much of this is like is out of our control. Or, you know, just bigger picture, man.
You can vote in the Democratic primary, though. Yeah, in California.
There you go.
In California, you can. See, I didn't
yes.
even, I didn't
not
even
Republican,
know
but you can in the Democratic.
Damn.
Right. It's and by the way, party. I also, it depends on your polling place. when you go on primary day, sometimes they'll say, like, which one are you, Democrat or Republican? I'm like, really? You're not going to check? Well, then, obviously, I'm gonna write in Arnold Schwarzenegger. Republican.
Or they're going to put you in the wrong place, which I've gone before, too, and had to drive to the other place.
Oh,
so I didn't have,
yeah. So, yeah, I think it's it's an interesting time because I think that the outrage and just how passionate people felt when Trump was elected, you can't burn that brightly forever. And I think people are literally burned out on it. And I think that's going to be the real problem in 2020 for Democrats looking to inspire people to make a change. You got to give them something that they want to vote for, not like you did last time where you gave them something that they're like, well, I guess I have to, you know, I mean, essentially both parties did that. They gave you something that's like, well, let's see what happens. Everybody hold their nose and see, see where it comes down. And I mean, just in general, I mean, you talk to people, they're just like, yeah, they don't like Trump. But they just—they can't. They just can't do it all the time.
We don't have an exciting candidate. We don't have another Obama. So
and it's just—I mean, there's another one out there who could run for president if
but
she wanted
ain't doing
to.
It. God bless her.
I think Sasha and Malia aren't old enough yet.
Not yet.
But, I think, wants that job, man.
Yeah, but in,
she's
in any
smart,
case,
she gets it.
Yeah, in any case, I think that you know, and I look, even people who do like Trump, they're just like. You know, there's like we said before, there's plenty of things that they dislike about him, but they're like, yeah, I mean, he's somebody I'll vote for. It just you're getting to a point where nobody wants to talk about it because of just you don't know how over the top the other side of the conversation is, you know. And doing this show is usually fun, but it can be exhausting to just keep up with everything and what's going on.
And
but,
I think you just before we get out of here, man, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that if you want an alternative to Trump, you have to find an alternative. You need to find someone to replace him with. Until that person exists and there's somebody with that type of message and that transcendent and that type of candidate. You know.
Yeah, and you know, time will tell if that person is one of these 20 that'll be debating next week, Wednesday and Thursday.
It's fascinating to see if you can get someone like you were saying, if someone not just to vote against Trump, but someone that you want to vote for.
Right, and that by the way, that's who has a chance of winning is somebody that you're voting for.
That you can,
not when you're basically checking off the box that says not Trump.
Right.
You guys aren't excited about Joe Biden?
Look, I think he's a perfect example. Example that people are going to get as excited as they can because they think he's going to win. And I don't know. It's hard to isolate anyone who's like, oh, yeah, this is a clear-cut winner.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
I just get excited whenever I think about
anybody,
Joe Biden.
And anybody who gets excited about the poll numbers that show any of these candidates beating Trump by 13 points.
I mean, the Joe Biden polls were very exciting. I will admit that. With Texas and Florida, I was very excited, but I was like, really? Him?
But,
really?
But they're a year and a half. Yeah, a year and a half
and
out.
Him?
So it'll
okay.
Yeah, but fortunately, we'll be here to keep an eye on all of it. And we appreciate everybody who joined us live and everybody watching the archive. And we will let you know when to expect us, but I believe Thursday night at 9 Pacific. But until then, Al, where do people find you?
Hey, everybody. I'm also going to give you my Twitter this time. You can find me at JamaicaHouseDoc on Twitter. Al G, thank you. Ba-da, ba-da.
And Scott Moore, where do people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at SMAN80. That's SMAN80. And of course, I'll be trolling Trump and Mitch McConnell.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com to check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.
I know, I remember the reference.